CBS Eye on the World from the surface of the planet Earth. We're looking to low Earth orbit, high Earth orbit, and beyond with Bob Zimmerman, who keeps the website Behind the Black. And Bob is here to celebrate all of the successes that attach to commercial enterprise, private enterprise, or as Bob eloquently puts it, freedom. Bob, a very good evening to you. A new record for how? Good evening.
Good evening, John. Well, there's a little history we have to go through first. Back in the mid-60s, more than a half century ago, the United States government was in a desperate race to catch up with the communist Soviet Union in space. They had pretty much dominated for the first decade of space since they launched Sputnik in 57. And the government was spending a lot of money and putting up a lot of spacecraft and satellites and manned missions trying to catch up. So that by 1966, the United States set a record for the most successful launches in a single year of 70 launches. The result of that aggressive program, of course, is that we won the space race to the moon, and by the end of that decade, the 60s, we pretty much had topped the Russians on almost every space achievement and continued to dominate the Russians in a lot of ways for the next few decades. But in terms of number of launches, the U.S. declined. The United States government decided to shut down the American launch industry entirely and force every payload to go on the space shuttle. That destroyed private enterprise in terms of rocketry, and it basically meant that for the next five decades, if the U.S. got 30 launches off in a year, they were doing well. I mean, really well. And by the start of this century, in 2000, the military thought there weren't going to be more than a dozen launches in a year, and they couldn't handle two different launch companies, so they combined them into UAL and a cartel arrangement with Boeing and Lockheed. Well, in 2011, when the shuttle was retired, this all changed, and the decision was made, and it took a while to really convince all the government to do this, but the decision was made that rather than build their own rockets and design them and launch them, the government would hire private space. In other words, it would go back to an American concept, not a Soviet concept, but let the private enterprise provide the service and the government merely as the customer. Over a decade, that transition took time, but by the end of that decade now, in the 20s, private enterprise is now flourishing. And so, last night, SpaceX successfully completed the 71st launch of the United States in 2022, breaking that 1966 record. And it's done it with almost 2 months left to go in the year. So that record's not only going to be broken, it's going to be shattered. And this achievement took place not by the government, but by a private enterprise. Six other private companies in America have completed launches this year, and another three hope to complete more launches by the end of the year. So by next year, the United States should have about 10 competing rocket companies putting payloads up, and those companies do all kinds of things, and we'll get to that. So we have a lot of variety and concepts to work with. So almost any idea anyone has, Americans, the American government, or even foreigners, they can buy American products and achieve that if they want to. And this is not just with space. We've got five different private space stations. It's not just with rocketry. We've got five different private space stations being built. And so this is all because of free competition, freedom, as I said, as you pointed out, John. We broke the shackles. We're no longer asking the government to create a space program, oh, I hate that word, which controls everything. But instead, we're allowing freedom and free competition and individuals and private companies to follow their own ideas. So you get a chaotic, and that's good, a chaotic competitive industry, and it's really wonderful. So we have a new record, John. And we have lots of stories to illustrate how this concept of freedom is working right now.
Yes, let's go to Axiom's second commercial flight to ISS. Carrying what, Bob?
It's carrying two Saudi Arabian passengers. And Axiom, by the way, is one of those companies building a private space station. They're initially starting out by making money hiring SpaceX's Dragon capsules and Falcon 9 rocket to put passengers up. They've already done one flight to ISS back in this early spring. They've now scheduled their second flight what's going to happen in May of next year. And two of their passengers, they're going to have three passengers on board. Two of those passengers are going to be from the Saudi Arabia. And in fact, Saudi Arabia has said one of them will be a woman. We do not yet know who those people will be, nor do we know the ticket prices. You know, they don't have to tell us the ticket prices. But based upon past information, I guess Saudi Arabia is paying between $20 million to $50 million per ticket. So that's money in Axiom's pocket, and that's going to help pay for the space station modules they're building. They're going to attach to ISS initially and then eventually undock and create their own private space station, hotel, and manufacturing and tourist area.
What is Freefall?
And here we have another private company. I took a tour of their facilities last week and wrote a long essay on Behind the Black describing what I saw. Freefall is an antenna company. It specifically makes antennas for spacecraft and as well as ground stations to connect those spacecraft. But it has a very innovative idea. Instead of doing parabolic dishes, which have to be aimed very precisely, which means the dish has to move, which means you've got a lot of moving parts and a lot of weight and a lot of complexity, much of which cannot go on a CubeSat because they're so small. Freefall has come up with the idea of spherical antenna dishes. It's a sphere. It's a half sphere, like a hemisphere, instead of parabolic, which has a specific focal point. The sphere doesn't. You can actually focus on any spot on the sphere. And that means you don't have to move the sphere. The sphere itself provides you a location anywhere on it to point. And so they've come up with this idea, and they're going to do their first test flight in January, a demo flight. They've done all the tests on the ground. They've got several contracts already, and their idea is to provide low-cost small antennas for small sats. For example, if it's a sphere, the dish could be literally a balloon you inflate, because when it inflates as a sphere, not as a parabolic dish. So that's their concept, and they're going to be testing this in the in early next year, John.
Now, I do know very much about Rocket Lab, but there's an important launch coming up. Explain, Bob.
Yes, the next launch of Rocket Lab, which is scheduled for November 4th, tomorrow, is going to make the second attempt to recover the first stage of their Electron rocket. Their idea of reuse and recovery is a little different than SpaceX. It's a small rocket, so having it land vertically to them, engineering-wise, didn't make sense. So instead, what they've done is they've attached parachutes to the first stage, and those parachutes help control its return, and then a helicopter stands by to snatch the parachute cords and therefore snatch the stage out of the air and then bring it back to land and deposit it on the ground gently. They have done the parachute tests already, and that's worked. They've been able to get the stages down to the exact spot. They tried a snatch in May, and the helicopter was successful in grabbing it, but unfortunately, there were too many stresses on the helicopter, so the pilot decided he had to release it for safety. Well, they've now done some more research, and in this next launch, they're going to try once again to use a Sikorsky S-92 helicopter to catch and secure the rocket and then bring it back to the ground safely. If they succeed, they will be the second private company capable of doing this after SpaceX. It's going to reduce the launch costs by Rocket Lab significantly, which means more customers can buy product to go into space, John. And so stand by. That's going to be exciting. I'm going to embed the live stream of that launch on Behind the Black, so if people wish to watch it on Friday, tomorrow, they can.
Now, let me understand this, Bob. The rocket launches like it's small, but it launches like a regular rocket. It's the first stage they're recovering.
So what happens is, so John, just quick, when it launches, the first stage separates, just like with SpaceX. It starts to come back to Earth. As it comes down, at a certain point, it releases parachutes to slow it down and to bring it down gently and also to control the return carefully. SpaceX instead uses its engines and attitude control to do that. But instead, they're going to bring it down, and the parachutes simplified their work. They didn't have to do as much complicated software or engine design. And so when it comes down and gets close to the ground, hanging on the parachutes, the helicopter grabs it. That concept of grabbing it by a parachute is not actually revolutionary. It's been done by the military since the 1960s, on and off. So they're going to try to do the same thing.
That was the question I was going to ask. Has this been done before? And you just answered it. So we move on to ULA, which is, remind Bob, ULA used to be semi-governmental. Is it still?
Well, when the government and the launch industry was practically dead at the start of this century, ULA was formed as that partnership between Boeing and Lockheed Martin and became the only launch company the military had. So there was big space and not very efficient and not very useful. Competition has forced ULA to get smart, and they're trying very hard. And so they're coming up with their Falcon rocket, which is going to be a little cheaper than the Atlas V they use now. And they finally have delivery of the BE-4 engines that Blue Origin was building, has been delayed for several years. And so this past week, they broke ground on a new facility in Alabama where they're going to be storing the Vulcan rockets as they build them, and as well as the place where they're going to build the fairings for that rocket as it goes into construction. And so this factory just indicates they expect to be doing a lot of Vulcan launches in the coming years. They have a good contract with Amazon for its Kuiper constellation, a lot of launches. And so that's just more private enterprise, more business, more for you know, getting to space.
Now, Stratolaunch is the one with the big airplane, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, the biggest on the planet. And what's their effort?
Yes, they were originally going to use their giant rock airplane. It's made up of, it was salvaged from two different 747s. They were originally going to use it to put a rocket underneath it and launch on a runway and then let the rocket take off from high altitude and go into space. But no, they couldn't get anyone to design the rocket, so they changed their plan. And so what instead they're doing is they're using rock to be a takeoff for hypersonic test vehicles. They call it a Talon. And Talon is going to, they've already got contracts with the military and I think private enterprise to do hypersonic test flights. And this provides a cheap and actually very efficient way to do a lot of test flights for hypersonic flight. Something that has not been possible to do. Hypersonic test flights have been very expensive and very complicated and very difficult. The idea is to do this cheaply. And so they've now done their first flight with an engineering test vehicle of the Talon attached to rock. Got a picture on Behind the Black. They got up to an altitude of 23,000 feet. They plan a few more of these flights. And then sometime next year, they're going to be flying the actual Talon vehicle to do test hypersonic flights for the military, John.
And we move, well, all right, fine. Now, but this is the really cool idea that isn't a rocket. I understand. These are balloon flights, and the balloon flights can go, remind me, Bob, they can't get into space. They can go to the limits of the stratosphere, correct?
That is correct. They get up to about 20, 25 miles, these high-altitude balloons, which is high enough to see the curve of the Earth. The official line for space is either 50 or 67 miles, depending on who you talk to. So these are not officially in space, but you're above 90% of the atmosphere, and you see the curve of the Earth. And a balloon flight, unlike Blue Origin's quick suborbital flights, lasts 6 to 8 hours, and it's gentle. So you get a very nice view for a very, very long time. And the capsules they're building, there's three different companies doing this, and the capsules they're building are going to hold 8 to 10 people, have a bar, be very casual, you know, just very nice facility. And so one of those companies, Space Perspective, it's based in Florida, has now signed a contract with a travel agency, Cruise Planners. Cruise Planners has purchased two full flights from Space Perspective, one in 25 and one 27. They've reserved the entire capsule. So that means they have now 16 tickets to sell, and they want to sell them to you. And so I posted that. This just indicates, once again, this is going to happen. It's not space, but, you know, when you compare the cost of this and what you get compared to the short suborbital flights, I'm not sure the suborbital flights are as good a deal.
All right, two big space stories here. Quickly, Bob. NASA delaying Starliner and Long March 5 is coming to Earth. How long for the delay of Starliner?
It's only a 2-month delay, and I think in this case it's not for any real serious problems. It's just simply, and NASA attributes it to scheduling conflicts with other spacecraft visiting ISS, and that is actually an issue. They've got only so many ports, so they've got to schedule things to come in and out, and so they've now scheduled the first manned Starliner mission to take place in April of 23, and I'm pretty confident unless something seriously happens, this is going to happen at that time.
And
the other story, John?
Yeah, it's unscheduled. This one's unscheduled. Long March 5B. What do we know so far?
Well, the core stage, the prediction window for the core stage has shrunk to about 8 hours. It's now going to come down sometime tomorrow on November 4th. We don't know when or where, but right now the prediction window says it is a possibility it could crash on the United States, in Spain, Africa, and parts of Australia. Any one of those places could see it. Of course, it also could land in the ocean. The Chinese, of course, are gambling it won't land on any people, but we do not know that. I should point out on my post on Behind the Black on this, China has four of the six largest uncontrolled reentries, all of which have occurred in the last 2 years with their long March 5B rocket. Everybody else is responsible and has not allowed such a thing to happen for decades. But China, they don't care. They'll break the rules, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.